So we're going to talk about operating big software, which is software that is made of many little pieces at scale, and what are the issues for startups, for enterprises, where the cost lies, and how we propose a solution for that kind of problems. So when you start a venture, or when you start a project, or in any company, you start with an idea, right? And you're like, okay, I'd like to make it easy for people to hail cabs, or I'd like to make it easy for people to share rooms, or you know, any kind of good ideas. You start with that, but in your mind, you're actually initially immediately at the next phase, which is, how do I make money with this idea? And when you are looking at the technical aspects of the situation, you're also in front of a very large amount of solutions, data, here, big data solutions, obviously, but also traditional solutions. And the question is, how can you leverage that? How can you pick the right ones? And how can you design something that makes sense? So starting with your idea, instead of trying to find 10,000 ways of making it not working, maybe you'd like a fast track and making sure that when you start, then immediately you can find the right solution, you can find the right software, and you can combine it all together so that you can actually hack into the data science or any kind of thing you'd like to you need for your project. So the idea we have is to propose a solution that is similar to what happened with the kernel or with open source in general. Is if we look at those solutions, is there a way not to share only the code for Hadoop or only the code for Spark, but to share templates, models of complex solutions that you can then give to someone else and they can spin the same thing? Which means that if you have a very good idea and someone productized it in the past, then you can reuse those components and you can you can get a very fast track to between idea, project, and then making money. So that's what would happen, right? If you add that kind of solution, instead of having this kind of big amount of solutions you don't really know how to operate, then you would be you would have fast track to your idea. So the question is how to get from confusion to something neat and operational. So this is the problem we identify. The secondary problem we identify is, if you look at open source software, it's mostly free. So you can deprecate it, you can download it, you can run it. But then, because there are many pieces of open source software, and they all have to be combined together, and they've got to be configured, and then you need to scale them out, and so on, the cost of operating the software has actually gone higher. So if you start a project, you will obviously look at open source, but then you'll look at DevOps people, you'll look at organizing all that, and you'll see that it's actually not cheap. And the TCO compared to traditional solutions is not necessarily that easy to compute. It's sort of even worse when you look at reorganizing with microservices or nanoservices or like serverless things, because as soon as you start doing, for example, containers, you need to rethink how you do the software. So if you're not in a completely green field, then there's a lot of things you're going to have to actually rewrite to make sure that they work in a container world. So in that space, we increase the complexity, and obviously that increases the cost as well. And so the notion of this movement or this phase change from traditional software that was expensive but easy to operate to software that scales out a lot, made of many pieces, but is that's cheap but hard and expensive to operate, we call that the age of big software. So it's a notion you'll find in many of Canonical presentations, and it's a common verbiage for us. It also means at the age of big software is like, if the cost of software has gone higher in operations, it means that the amount of people capable of running those operations is actually gone a bit lower. So if I ask you now, how many people in this group are able to deploy Hadoop? Probably, okay, we've got one. So if it's Hadoop and Spark, okay, both. So that's three, actually. And now we do Kubernetes. Okay, zero. So that's it. So if you want to operate all these kind of software at scale, then you'll have a problem really quickly, because you'll find people very specialized and really good at deploying Hadoop. But then when the developer is going to ask, okay, now I want to do containers, or actually I'd like to switch from Spark to Flink, and it works on my laptop, but then at that moment, you'll find an issue finding the right resources. The solution we have for this is what we call model-driven. So it's the notion of modeling the different bits of software, how they are organized together, how they connect to each other, in a way that is open sourceable. So you can take that model and you can share it with others. It's something that we see coming, and we see people talking a lot more at the moment about the modeling of big software. And all those people are our clients or partners. So Microsoft is also a client, but mostly a partner. But the Netflix of this world, they all use Ubuntu, right? Uber is using Ubuntu, Waze, Lyft. All those people are primarily using Ubuntu as the base operating system for everything they do. That's really positive for us as a company. But it tells us when they release software and when they talk to us, they face a limitation, which is, oh, I have problems running on two separate clouds because the APIs underneath are different. And so I need twice my code to actually deploy my software. So it's a problem to me. I have problems because it's very easy to operate in the cloud, but when I need bare metal, then it's harder, because I need to start from scratch, and I don't really have APIs to spin servers and which are in my data center, so I need to do something about it. So what they express is the need to be able to manage all their software, all the operations of the software, really easily in the modeled way. They need to be able to connect software together. So if they use Spark and Hadoop, the fact that Spark will connect to Hadoop and eventually to Yarn and so on. That they want to switch at some point between Hadoop and another component, and they would like that to be as seamless as possible. They would like to do upgrades. They would like to scale this software really nicely. And obviously, as they're really used and often engines of innovation and open source, they would like the system to be open source as well. So that's why we came with Juju. So who here has heard of Juju in any way? Okay, so not everyone. So Juju is an open source piece of software, as you can guess, which goal is to take a bunch of resources and which can be bare metal, but they also can be any cloud, right? It's completely abstract from the underlying system. Then we start by deploying one instance of Juju, which is what we call a Juju controller. And this controller will sit on one of those resources. It can be a VM, it can be a container, it can be a bare metal server, pretty much anything. And from there, through your laptop and a CLI or a GUI, you can spin something. And you can ask Juju to deploy for you Hadoop, you can ask Juju to deploy MariaDB, you can ask Juju to deploy Spark, and many more software. But more importantly, you can ask Juju to create relations between those bits and pieces. So think of it let's take a very simple example, right? A web server. So you take WordPress and you say, I want to deploy that, and I would like a database. So you've got MySQL or MariaDB, and you want to connect it to your web server. If you do that manually, you're going to spin initially maybe one instance only, install MySQL, install Apache or Nginx, and then you're going to configure stuff. You're going to deploy WordPress, and you're going to configure WordPress to talk to that database, then you're going to go on the web page, and then you're going to say, I want to install, you're going to give some MySQL credentials, and something's going to happen. The schema gets deployed, some data gets deployed, and then you can start with WordPress. Well, that operation or these operations can be modeled with Juju. So you can say, well, Juju, I want you to create a relation between WordPress and MySQL. And those two elements, we call charms, will be aware of the relation and aware of what they need to share or consume to make that relation work. Which means that the MySQL charm will say, hey, I'm connected to a web server, I need to expose credentials so that people can create database on me. Fine. And on the other side, WordPress will say, oh, I know what to do with MySQL credentials. I'm going to connect, create a database, inject a schema, and some demo data. And that's it. So that's what Juju does. It allows you to do that. And the secondary thing it does is it has a notion of, you understand this relation between two different components, but it also has a notion of depth, of number of instances you want to scale a system to. So if I take my very same example of WordPress, if you are very successful, it's probably at some point in time your T2 micro instance will not going to be enough to handle the load on your system. So you want to scale that out. So you'd say, okay, so now I need a load balancing system. Maybe you're going to use ELBs, maybe you're going to use a JProxy. So let's say you use a JProxy, you can ask Juju to deploy it, connect it to WordPress. Again, they will know about each part and what happens, right? And then you're going to say, well, I need to scale the web server. So you ask Juju to scale that out, add units of that service, which is hidden behind the load balancing system. And suddenly you've got a WordPress system that scales really well, and you can add loads, you can connect it to any monitoring system, so you can auto-scale that system. And you've got something, more importantly, that is independent from where you deploy it. So if you did it on AWS in a pure AWS way, you would do CloudFormation, you would add that to an auto-scaling group, you've got ELBs. But then when you move to Google Cloud for some cost reason, for example, you would have an issue because you'll have to relearn everything to set up, again, the equivalent of ELBs, the equivalent of auto-scaling groups and so on. And in some cases, some of those features would not exist. So Juju, by taking only raw information, only the compute, only the network, and only the storage, allows you to model regardless of where you deploy. It's also true on your laptop, by the way, so you can use containers, not Docker containers, but like C containers, which we orchestrate through XD, to spin the same solutions, the same models on the laptop. So you can experiment very complex systems on a single very simple system. So that's what it is. Juju allows you to model the software, all the life cycle, how do I install it? What operations do I need to do? Do I need to start, to stop, to restart services, actions that I want to take in the software? So which can be, if I change a configuration and restart the engine, I can abstract that action through Juju as well. All the connections between the software, between different bits, but also between peers of the same workload to manage the scale. And it's, as I mentioned, it works on bare metal, public cloud, private cloud, and your local laptop. As a company, we've decided to support some charms, not all pieces of software. So we run partnerships with people running or building commercial software so they can deploy through Juju. But some pieces we operate ourselves and we manage the charms, and that also helps us to grow the community and to explain to people with examples and so on how they can use Juju and how they can create for Juju. In the world of big data, we've selected three core pieces: the Hadoop framework, then Spark and Kafka. And on that, we iterate and grow different solutions. So in this context, this example is Hadoop deployed with Spark and connected to Zeppelin. In order to do demos and so on, we've also added an OSIS log collector, so you can re-inject the logs from Hadoop into Hadoop. And if you, for example, SSH into the box, it creates logs, and then we can analyze those logs, just for the sake of the demo. What's interesting here, the scale of the screen is not very good, but so this is a compute slave, right? And then I've got a YARN master, I've got my HDFS master, and then I've got a secondary master node here, and a plugin. If I had, in this model, 10 slaves, because I want to scale the data a lot, I would still have only one circle, because it's a service, right? The service slave, to Juju, is just a single service, regardless of the number of units it's made of. And so we've got this notion of plugin, which is very specific to the Hadoop environment. And the plugin is a way for us to express to whatever needs to connect to Hadoop, to share the information about Hadoop. What is the version? What are the location of the binaries and so on? So that's done through this pluggable mechanism. So So I'm going to list some solutions that we promote and we run. So we've already seen this one. So that's Hadoop Core. And as you can see, we've got a client. So if you deployed this on your laptop or on eCloud, you would be able to interact with HDFS. Then you can, once it's deployed, replace this client, which or add on top of this client just Spark. And in that context, you can run Spark workload directly on the Hadoop Core. And then you can add Zeppelin. So we go back to the previous solution. So what happens in that space, when you add Zeppelin, it's going to install Zeppelin on top of the Spark instance. In some cases, you can co-locate charms, or you can ask to use multiple machines. We also have a charm for IPython notebook, by the way. So you can essentially pick and mix and match and Lego brick your solutions and create what we call a bundle. And once you have a bundle, this is eventually just a YAML file which you can share with someone else. So you've got many applications to that. It's the first and easy one is you have a team and they will have to have a development environment, a staging environment, a production environment, and maybe they've got several development environment because it's different teams interacting on the same raw use case. And sometimes you've got issues in the data store because you don't want to share all the data, and then building all those policies can be complex. So you just want them to experiment with the solution. You can give them a sub-data set, and then they're going to iterate on it. With that model, you can give this YAML file to your developer and say, okay, just run that on this server. And they will have exactly the same environment. With all the network issues they may have in the production, they will have them as well in this deployment, including if they deploy on their laptops, as they deploy in containers, and those have a network plane as well. So you would kind of emulate what happens in production. So that's one use case. The other use case, and it's, I would say for vendors, but also and primarily for integrators, it's the fact that you can, once you have one model and you know it's working well and so on, you can share it with your customers. So you can give, okay, so my POC is actually take this YAML file and deploy it on your environment. And it just works. And so you can iterate and you can share your solution very quickly. In that context, increasing the margins. So this is another example of how you can consume Juju charms. So if you've played a little bit with Docker, you probably know that you start any Docker file with a from, and then you say Ubuntu or Alpine or whatever. And then some people may create layers, and they say, oh, I've got Ubuntu plus Java, and I call that Java, and then you can just use that and add on top. So we have the same notion in Juju. The charms are made of layers. So if someone has built something really great to install Java or Spark, and you want to build on top of that, then you can reuse that as a layer. And this is an example we have with our partners at GigaSpaces. They've got a specific distro of Spark called Inside Edge. It's actually some form of plugin on Spark to create a memory ring and increase the speed. And they have a specific version of Zeppelin as well. The only thing they had to do was to take our charms and use them as layers and just add the different logic on top just to install their binaries. So it's pretty easy to Lego brick not only between charms, but also inside of charms using that layer construct. Another model, and that's not directly in the big data space, is the cloud. So this is actually today how Canonical makes most of its money. So we deploy OpenStack clouds primarily for telco people, but also in the finance area. Retail is also a big market for us. So this is an example of a model that takes usually bare metal and then builds a cloud on top. And you can use that cloud then. You can retarget Juju to use this to spin workloads on top. And finally, and that's a little more recent, we have invested, you probably saw the news, in the Docker space. We have one workload that we manage ourselves, and that's Kubernetes. So you can use Juju to deploy two versions of Kubernetes, one we call Core, and one we call the Canonical Distribution of Kubernetes, or CDK. The difference is the Core runs on only two VMs, and collocates the etcd plane, which is essentially a service discovery mechanism, the mather, and also the logic to create the certificates and so on one node, and then you've got one worker node. You can scale the workers, but obviously it's not HA. And the secondary one, which is the CDK, is production-grade Kubernetes. So it gives you a master plane that is scaled out as well, so many nodes with a load-balanced API endpoint. And so you can also scale the workers, obviously. And we add to that the Elk stack to do the monitoring and log and metrics collection for the whole system. So you can use Kubernetes on, it's tested on bare metal, it's tested on Amazon GCE and Azure, and you can just play with it. And the secondary, and this one is currently an effort that's made by the community, Tom Barber from Spicul is building this. It's a DCOS deployment. It's not currently fully supported by Mesosphere, as the Ubuntu version of DCOS is not yet released, but we hope it will be at some point. And so in this context, you don't have the HA on the mather, but you can scale the agents, and it's a much more simple model. So if you want to start playing with Juju, we have a website, obviously, jujucharms.com, where you can find all the documentation. It's a completely free and open source system. You can download and play with it. It's embedded in any distribution of Ubuntu. So you get it with 16.04, with 14.04. It's complementary also to another tool that's called Charms, and allows you to build the charms and to create content for Juju. Right. So we will have a booth tomorrow. So if you want to see demos, or if you want to discuss different use cases, whether you're a vendor, a developer, or an integrator, a customer, then come and see us, and we can iterate and see different solutions. All right. Anyone has questions? There's one.
Any questions?
Yes, I can just share about the orchestration. So I'm not sure how you model for orchestration. You mentioned Kubernetes, you're using that. Is that you're using Kubernetes internally for orchestration, or do you have your own internal orchestration model?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So for orchestration, meaning the dependencies. So the ORCPs, you have to directly sync the graph there, yes? Left and proceeding right, so is that correct? This graph here?
Yeah.
Is that a directly cyclic graph?
So, no.
Is there direction on the edges?
No. What it means here, I can't zoom. Okay, so this is the load balancer, right? It's connected to my easy RSA, so generating certs. This is a Kubernetes master. Master is here, worker is here, there, etcd plane here, and then it's a file bit stuff to collect the logs and metrics, right? So those are charms. Yeah. So essentially, piece of code to deploy.
Okay, there are implicit ordering in which some of these should be installed.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, so then that implies you have some orchestration you need to do. You need to define the relationships between.
Yes, absolutely.
So what is the model you use to define the relationships between the terms? Is it Kubernetes or is it something else?
No, it's. Do you want to answer this?
Okay, so each term internally decides how it wants to handle that sort of thing. Typically, if you install something out of order, it would register as blocked and say, hey, I'm waiting for this thing. And then when you deploy the thing that it's waiting for, it becomes unblocked and you need to deploy. Now, the things handling orchestration inside the terms might be anything. There are a lot of terms that run chef and puppet inside.
Thank you. There, you could simply do things with bash scripts. It's up to the charm author how the charm deals with things internally. But there are conventions for the charms to talk to each other, which is generally if a charm requires a relation, it will wait for the relation, inform you that it needs it, and then just wait patiently until it comes up.
How are those conventions specified?
Got it. So they are specified in the relations. The relations are also can be anything. That they're basically Python or Bash scripts that specify. Right. Well, correct. The YAML just specifies these things, and then we'll set up relations between the things. But the technical details of the relation actually live in the code of the relation. So it's very flexible. But the charms. Juju is as ignorant about the services it deploys as possible, and all of the intelligence about how to handle the charms is embedded in those charms and the relations. That's why it's kind of we're saying that it's operations, open sourced operations, because all the operational knowledge lives in the code.
Okay, but then you have bundles which are compositions of charms.
So right.
Your orchestration can't propose, I guess.
Right. So the bundles are these are the things, and they relate in this way. And then
but to compose bundles, that won't work currently because they don't have an explicit.
Right. Well, no, because so.
Okay, I think right. I think one thing is each charm expresses or explicitly says to what it can connect, which means that the intelligence of the relations, the orchestration, is prepared in a certain context, which is up to the charm authors to develop. So if you take two bundles, if I take this, right, and I say, well, I have MySQL. MySQL doesn't have anything to do with Kubernetes, so you can't connect them. Because none of the charms says they can be connected to each other. So there's no logic to make that happen. And as a result, Juju will refuse to create that relation.
I think it would be nice if you had specified semantics for this so that you could reason about it, and then you could do lots of nice things like, you know, improve concurrency and parallelism and stuff, you know.
Yeah, right.
Model for this. I mean, you know, these look to me like interfaces and implementations of interfaces, but unless you call them that, unless you define it as a data parallel execution model, and then you try to execute it as such, then you're going to have a kind of a mess in terms of how people reason about these things. So. Composing to build larger abstractions around them.
Right, that's useful. I would recommend playing around with them a little bit and see if you keep if you still have that feedback, because thus far, I've only been working on this project since March, and it's been around a long time before me. But thus far, I haven't run into things that feel to me like a mess, though I definitely have done some reading of the charm and relation or interface code specifically to understand how things connect. The idea being that you can put anything in this, so it's hard to kind of specify things. And then you say, okay, but this piece of software doesn't work with it. Like I haven't run into anything that doesn't work with the model.
So there's a notion in how we recommend to write charms that will consume relations, is that if you offer something, like in the context of MySQL, you say, okay, I propose databases to the world, then you can, in your charm, add snippets of code to consume that relation. And so that other people, when they say, oh, I want to consume MySQL, I want to connect, then they can just use those kind of prefabricated bits of codes and snippets to easily integrate with your charm. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, I have a question about availability and failure tolerance in the works. Where does the model that Juju deploys live? As in, if some machines go down, what does Juju, what is there to deal with the fact these machines have gone down, and how does it react to that situation?
Okay, so when we go back to this, right? So you start with a client, right? And your user experience is, I will connect to different clouds, so I'm adding clouds to my configuration. And then when you're ready to work with that cloud, you're going to bootstrap. And bootstrap is this notion of creating this bit, which is one machine in the environment. The controller can be deployed in HA mode. If you work on a public cloud or in a private cloud, then it's going to try to use as many ADs as possible in your environment. So you're going to spin three of them or more, and they will be connected. When you do a command like juju deploy, you're actually asking this controller to talk to the cloud API it's deployed on to spin an instance of something, right? And adding to its model, which is stored in a MongoDB database. So then you deploy the model, it creates a relation, in, it stores everything in MongoDB. If one of the nodes go, one step back. When you deploy, what happens is the Juju control will talk to the API of the cloud, say, I need an instance that has those properties, like that mini cores, memory, blah, blah, blah. It spins the unit and it uses cloud in it to install the Juju agent and configure it to talk back to the server. So it's a server agent model. And then the agent will be told to execute a set of charms to become what it needs to become, like MySQL or Hadoop or whatever. If one of those nodes go down, the agent loses a relation, and so the server is made aware of that issue. But it's not going to guarantee you the fact that it's going to respin an instance. Because it's a model of what happens. If you want to orchestrate and say, like Kubernetes would do with pods and replication controllers, where you say, I want three of them, and you're always going to get three, Juju will not do that for you. So you need to connect it to something else. So we have integrations with Nagios and Zabbix, for example, that monitor and say, well, if I'm losing a node or something, then I'm going to scale. So you react to what happens to orchestrate, essentially.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does.
Cool. Anything else? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.